Hello. Welcome to this podcast focusing on the rapidly evolving treatment landscape for hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer that includes oral SERDs, PROTAC estrogen receptor degraders, and novel combination strategies. In this episode, which includes excerpts from a recent educational symposium, Drs. Ruta Rao, Kamel Abu Hussein, Jame Abraham, and Paolo Tarantino discuss results of pivotal clinical trials with these agents and how they apply these data to individualized treatment recommendations. This activity is provided by PER and supported by educational grants from Stemline Therapeutics, Inc. and Rigel Pharmaceuticals, Inc. First, we will hear from Dr. Jame Abraham, who will discuss the pivotal clinical trials leading to the approval of next-generation endocrine agents for patients with ESR1 mutated, hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer.
So I'm going to talk about targeting ESR1 mutant disease after CDK4/6inhibitor progression. So this is really an interesting slide because the things are changing so rapidly as we speak. At least the first line kind of stay the same way. So first line is kind of set. It's endocrine treatment plus CDK4/6 inhibitors. And if the patient if the tumor has a PIK3 mutation, then endocrine treatment plus CDK4/6 plus ENOVA. And majority of our patients probably end up getting endocrine treatment plus CDK4/6 based upon number of large trials which showed almost doubling of the progression-free survival and improvement in overall survival in ribociclib and a trend in abemaciclib. So second line, this is where we'll spend most of our time today. That's completely based upon the mutations, some of the truncal mutations, some of the acquired mutations. So PIK3, PIK3CA, or AKT, then we will go for a PIK3 inhibitor, alpelisib or CAPI, plus fulvestrant. So in my practice, again, I have no conflict of interest, so I can say. In my practice, in general, I pick CAPI. I haven't used alpelisib, even though I'm a 100% breast cancer doctor, I haven't used alpelisib for a long time. I pick CAPI mainly because of the side effect profile. And alpelisib, I know when it came out, we were all excited, but the side effects were really tough. And then this is what we are going to spend all our time today, talking about ESR1 agents, elacestrant, imlunestrant, and then vepdegestrant, and that we'll talk today. And if the patient has a BRCA mutation, then olaparib and talazoparib. And then we have a number of other options if they don't have a mutation, switching based upon number of trials, and we'll go through some of those things a little bit. We are not going to talk much about this thing, and Dr. Tarantino is here. You know that he's the god or prince of ADCs, and I'm sure he can spend all the time talking about ADCs, but unfortunately, he's going to talk about endocrine treatments today. So this is kind of an overview of some of the acquired ESR1 mutations or acquired mutations. In hormone receptor positive breast cancer, there are two driver mutations we focus. One is the PIK3A, one is an ESR1. And the interesting thing is they kind of follow opposite directions. So when you activate the PIK3A and the ESR1 goes in the other direction, the ESR1 and activated PIK3 goes in the other direction. So PIK3CA, that's important to know, that's a truncal mutation, so you can detect it from the original biopsy. It's present at baseline, about 40% of hormone receptor positive tumors, and then it's a clonal or founding event. And the frequency in general stays the same, and if you do a biopsy, test from the original tumor versus in a metastatic setting. And then ESR1, and of course, all of you know that really well. It's rare at diagnosis unless the patient was exposed to an aromatase inhibitor, less than 5% in primary tumors. And usually it's induced, and we are going to talk about this in detail in subsequent slides. It's induced with an aromatase inhibitor treatment. About 25 to 40% of metastatic cancer setting, patients can acquire this mutation. That's an important mode of resistance to endocrine treatment at that time. And rarely, I shouldn't say rarely, but a lot of time I get phone calls about this scenario, and we may think it's more than what we see, like 10 to 15%, then I'm sure many of you have patients with both mutations, and we'll talk about how do we pick agents when the patients have both ESR1 and PIK3 mutations. So I'm not the smartest person on this podium, but I'm the oldest person, so I can say this. When I started practicing, we had serums, and we have aromatase inhibitor, and that's it. And all the young people sitting here thinking we were all born with all these things. No, this is completely a new time. It's amazing, amazing. It's so good for our patients. We can actually talk to them about so many new options. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is we can tell patients about so many new drugs. So. Of course, the good old aromatase inhibitors, and again, the serums, and we have, this is really changing the space. I know we are going to talk about adjuvant. I was thinking, I started my practice in 2002. I mean, many of the people were in kindergarten at that time. And that time, the ATAC trial was presented in San Antonio. I don't know if any of you remember. That is the first aromatase inhibitor trial came out. And last San Antonio, we had the first third adjuvant data came out. So it's 25 years later, we are talking about the whole adjuvant scenario changing with novel agents. So we'll talk about the SERDs mostly, and then PROTACs, both PROTACs and SERDs. So this is a good slide, I thought, for practical purpose, and how do we test, how do we detect the ESR1 and PIK3 mutations in our patients. So for ESR, liquid biopsy or ctDNA is recommended or preferred by NCCN and ASCO recommend the same thing. It's easy to do. So the ctDNA liquid biopsy really changed how we do on a daily basis. We can order that multiple times, fast turnaround, and it captures the dynamic nature of the tumor. And tissue biopsy usually, in general, I don't, put my patients through tissue biopsy all the time, unless it's a long time since we had the original biopsy done, or if I think there's a major change how the tumor is behaving. Tissue biopsy is gold standard for histology, confirming the HER2, and then enables a broad panel of ISC testing. In practice, usually, as I said, ctDNA is the one we do. If the ctDNA is negative, if you have questions, you can always do a biopsy. You can do that. But PIK3, you can always go with the tissue. This data has been around for a couple of years, so many of you sitting in the room really knows this really well. So this is the EMERALD trial. It's the first large phase 3 randomized trial, which looked at elacestrant versus the treatment of choice by the physician, treatment of choice. So fulvestrant, anastrozole, letrozole, or exemestane in the control arm, and elacestrant, the 400 milligram daily dose, randomized patients. Again, the inclusion criteria is really important. Almost all patients had CDK4/6 inhibitors prior to entering the study. And some of the patients had chemotherapy, and almost 70% of the patients had visceral disease. So kind of heavily pretreated patient population. And then in ESR1 mutated patients, there's a substantially improved progression-free survival, 4 months versus 2 months with a significant p-value here. And this is kind of highlighted, I can look at here. So about 24% of the patients had primary endocrine resistance, 25% of the patients had prior chemo in the advanced setting, and 24% of the patients had prior fulvestrant. So, and 72% of the patients had a visceral metastasis, kind of heavily pretreated patients. This was put in some of the questions, the median progression-free survival with prior endocrine treatment plus CDK4/6, more than 12 months, again, substantially significant for patients who received elacestrant versus the treatment of physician's choice. Patients who have endocrine-sensitive tumors did the best in this subset. So EMBER-3, the other phase 3 trial with imlunestrant, similar randomization, inclusion criteria is overall similar, but CDK4/6 prior treatment with CDK4/6 was not mandated in this trial. Three arms here: imlunestrant 400 milligram QD, single agent, then of course standard of care, fulvestrant or exemestane, imlunestrant plus abemaciclib. This is a really an innovative way of combining a CDK4/6 and a new endocrine backbone. And then as you can see here, in patients with ESR1 mutation, there is an improvement in progression-free survival, you can see, and you can see here improvement in progression-free survival in the 6 months and the 12-month analysis, 7% versus 26%. So this is the PROTAC inhibitor. Again, moving on to the newer or most complete degradation of the estrogen receptor. You can see this is a 200 milligram daily oral drug versus fulvestrant here as controlled arm, and improvement in progression-free survival with PROTAC inhibitors compared to the standard of care, which is the fulvestrant in this here, which is FDA approved based upon this data. So again, we can't compare three trials, but if you look at three large trials which looked at the new agents, Emerald with the elacestrant, 1 to 2 prior endocrine treatment, CDK4/6 was required in this trial, one prior chemo was allowed, and the PFS was 2 months versus 4 months, and in patients who received CDK4/6 more than 12 months, it's about really a significant difference here. EMBER-3 with imlunestrant, one prior endocrine treatment, within 12 months of adjuvant treatment. This was not, CDK4/6 was not required, no prior chemo was allowed, and here the PFS difference was 5.5 versus 3.8. You can see the control arm was similar because of this arm is heavily pretreated. With a PROTAC inhibitor, again, 1 to 2 prior endocrine treatment. Here, a CDK4/6 was required, and chemo was not allowed. A significant difference you can see here, too, 5 months versus 2 months. So with elacestrant, the real-world data is consistent with what was seen in the Emerald trial. There was no major difference. So moving on to the combination, I know that's actually a question we and our patients always ask, and clinically we kind of think about that. So this is the answer for that trial: imlunestrant plus abemaciclib versus imlunestrant as single agent. You can see the PFS in all patients, not just ESR1 mutated. There was an improvement in our PFS. Patients who are exposed to CDK4/6, again, an improvement with imlunestrant plus abemaciclib, and even in patients with ESR1 mutation, similar improvement. So this is a really impressive improvement in progression-free survival we are seeing in all subset of patients, not just the patients with the ESR1 mutation. So this is the phase 2 study of elacestrant in combination with everolimus or abemaciclib. We can probably focus on the phase 2 part. which is elacestrin plus everolimus. Everolimus dose is slightly lower than what we usually use, 7.5 versus 10. And elacestrin here, abamaciclib plus one, abamaciclib is a standard dose, 150 milligram, which usually we use. So here, elacestrin plus abamaciclib again had an improvement in progression-free survival, and elacestrin plus everolimus had an improvement in progression-free survival. Progression-free survival was about 8.3 months. With abamaciclib, it's 14.3 months. Again, it's a phase 2 single-arm study. I can't say an improvement. So the PFS was actually seen in all subset of patients with visceral disease, no prior fulvestrant, with mutations, ESR1 mutation, wild type, and even PIK3 mutations. There is tomorrow, 1:30 to 4:30 in the session, we'll have an update from this phase 1b2 of this the trial from Elevate. So Evira trial is a phase 3 trial of giredestrant plus everolimus in, again, metastatic breast cancer post CDK4/6 inhibitor. Giredestrant is the other, we're going to talk about the adjuvant data in a second, or the third. So giredestrant plus everolimus versus standard of care here. The primary endpoints were invasive progression-free survival and progression-free survival in intent-to-treat population versus patients with ESR1 mutation. And you can see that in patients with ESR1 mutated tumors, there's a substantially improvement in progression-free survival in patients who are treated with the combination of giredestrant plus everolimus. In subgroup analysis, you can see all subset of patients benefited by the combination. And if the patients had PIK3 mutation, or AKT, or P10, or ESR1, they all benefited by that. So this is hot off the press we didn't have the exact slides, but we have some snapshots from the presentation from today. So post-progression treatment analysis of Evira breast cancer, a phase 3 trial of giredestrant plus everolimus in patients with ER-positive, HER2-negative, and advanced breast cancer who were previously treated with CDK4/6. Dr. Javeri presented. We talked about the schema, elacestrant 30 milligram plus everolimus 10 milligram. The dose of everolimus is different here. So this is the updated data. Overall patient population, there's again an improvement in progression-free survival in patient tumor with ESR1 mutation. You can see a significant improvement in survival. And when they looked at patients with, mostly this is driven by ESR1 mutated tumors. Because in patients with wild type, the difference was not significant. So at interim analysis, this is interesting, a favorable overall survival was seen, consistent with prolonged PFS2 and chemotherapy-free survival. This is really an interesting data. So key takeaway from this presentation, which just happened today, PFS benefit with giredestrant everolimus was sustained through the next subsequent line of treatment. The combination showed an improvement in progression-free survival, improved chemotherapy-free survival. Subsequent therapies were generally balanced across the treatment arms and representative of the current standard of care, what we do. ADELA, which is the elacestrin plus everolimus phase 3 trial, which is ongoing now, that will be, that's accruing patients at this point. So there are a number of agents which can block the PIK3 AKT-mTOR pathway. So it makes sense to use an everolimus, which is an mTOR inhibitor, in combination with elacestrant in this setting, because that can block the mTOR pathway too. So in conclusion, the treatment options in second line, ER-positive HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer, we have a number of options based upon the specific mutations in ESR1 mutated. We have elacestrant immunolysin as single agents, and we have in NCCN immunolysin plus abamacyclib is added as other options too. In PIK3 mutated patients, we have again alpelisib plus fulvestrant or CAPI plus fulvestrant and PTEN and AKT. If the patient has, this is a question which we don't know, we don't have the answer for this question, but we can talk about that. If they have any targetable mutations, everolimus plus exemestane or fulvestrant, switch the endocrine treatment, different CDK4/6 agents. And then if they're not candidate for endocrine treatment, the other options, including chemos and ADCs.
Now, Dr. Rao puts the faculty on the hot seat to face the fire by answering questions about how they would think through treatment recommendations for common clinical scenarios.
Great. Thank you so much for that review. So now we're going to do the hot seat. Who will face the fire? And you guys all get to decide that. All right, so here's our case. This is a 61-year-old postmenopausal woman with a hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer, and she progresses after 20 months of letrozole ribociclib. Liquid biopsy reveals an acquired ESR1 D538G mutation. She has bone predominant disease and is clinically stable. So which treatment option would you select? All right, so it looks like 80-20 to elacestrant imlunestrant. All right, so who's going to face the fire? Who are you going to put on the hot seat of our three esteemed panelists here? All right, so it looks like it's going to be Dr. Tarantino.
I got burnt.
All right, so I'm going to put the case back up, and then we're going to ask you in your practice, which treatment option would you select?
So I think there's three key words that are very important here. The first is 20 months. It means the patient has derived significant benefit from endocrine therapy in the first line. The second key word is ESR1 mutant. It means the disease is endocrine dependent, and somehow we expect it to benefit from an oral SERD or a new generation endocrine therapy. And the third is bone predominant, which suggests that there is no visceral crisis, that we can definitely afford to give another line of endocrine therapy. And so which endocrine therapy? I would exclude from these basically none, because all of them have shown very nice data. But in truth, I do think that developing some experience with some drug does have a value. And so I think among the three of them, with elacestrant, we've been having some, let's say, confidence in time to see both clinical data, real-world data, promising data in patients that have received treatment for a long time. And so I do think that if forced to make a choice, which is usually the case in clinic, because we cannot give the three together, I would choose elacestrant. But if you ask me, would imlunestrant be a wrong choice? I don't think so, because in truth, it's also an effective, well-tolerated agent. We don't have the same experience with it, because it was approved very recently. And vepdegestrant, would it be a wrong answer? It would not, just because it also showed a significant advantage in ESR1 mutant disease and quite consistent with the other agents in truth. And it does have what we expect to be a different mechanism of action somehow. Although in truth, I think we're still learning about this. We know that it's supposed to degrade the estrogen receptor in a different way, but the final product, the clinical product, is improvement of PFS in patients with ESR1 mutant disease. So I think each one of them would provide most likely benefit to this patient. But among them, if I was forced to choose, I would choose the one with which we have more confidence, which is elacestrant.
Great, great. So let's ask some more questions to delve a little bit more deeply into this. So I think you brought this up a little bit because of the different theoretical different mechanism of action of vepdegestrant. So does this depth of ER degradation for a SERD versus a PROTAC factor into your treatment selection? And would it make a difference if this patient had an ESR1 Y537S mutation? Would the PROTAC mechanism of complete ER protein elimination offer a theoretical advantage over a SERD in that case?
So, you know, I think there's different camps in the way we think of treating patients. There's those that are a bit more progressive and try to integrate in clinical practice even some theoretical, let's say, mechanisms and sometimes some anecdotal data or small sub-analysis. I do feel, in truth, I don't believe that a different type of mutation would really guide my selection here. And so I do feel that, in this case, elacestrant would make sense. But once again, each one of them potentially would be effective. And I'm missing the first part of the question.
No, that was
just the type of mutation. I do feel
the mechanism of action of the different drugs.
That's another thing that I've been having many discussions with peers. And actually, the main question I'm very fascinated about is we're starting to have many SERDs. And so the question is, what would you do after progression on a SERD? And one thing I'm hearing a lot is vepdegestrant may have a different mechanism of action, so switching to that may make sense, which I think it's true and false together, meaning that, yes, there is preclinical data suggesting a higher level of degradation of ER, but clinically, I'm not that sure that they're totally different. And so I do feel sequencing SERDs is not crazy. We have good data with them. If the patient, after progression on a SERD, is found to still have kind of an indolent disease, bone predominant, that could benefit from additional endocrine therapy, I think both imlunestrant and vepdegestrant could make sense at progression. And I wouldn't think that the specific SM1 mutation would guide my choice in this case. But I do hope that we can get there. I do hope that we can accumulate enough data, both trial data, real-world data, to tell us for this specific mutation that mechanism of action works best for that other mutation, another agent. I just think we're not yet there.
Yeah. And one last question about this case. So I think you very nicely explained to us that there's really not any patient or disease factors that may help you make a choice between these. But in terms of tolerability, are there any side effects between the three drugs that would make you choose one over the other?
So yeah, first of all, the good news is that the three of them are very well tolerated, which I think is something we not always see in oncology. And it's great to see nice activity with good tolerability. One key differentiator is that vepdegestrant does come with some QT prolongation. It's usually benign, and it's not too common. It's about 10% of patients, but it is a differentiating factor. And if the patient needs to be on some drug that prolongs the QT interval, I would not choose vepdegestrant, for instance. Imlunestrant seems to have slightly more GI side effects. And so if the patient, for some reason, was having baseline nausea or some other issue, you could think of not using that. Elacestrant doesn't seem to have much peculiar side effects. Something that has been described is an elevation of lipids, somehow of cholesterol, but it's very rare. And I cannot think of a situation where that would impair the use of elacestrant. So slight differences, but overall the message is that the three of them are very well tolerated.
Well, I think Dr. Tarantino did a great job on the hot seat here. So
let's.
So thank you very much. So we're going to change the case just a little bit. So this same patient, she has now liver metastasis 6 months after her oral endocrine monotherapy. And let's take this as a slightly different case. This is a patient who has not only an ESR1 mutation, but also a PIK3CA mutation. So in a patient like this who has liver mets now after 6 months of oral endocrine monotherapy, what are you going to do as your next treatment? An oral SERD or a PROTAC with a CDK4/6 rechallenge, an oral SERD with an mTOR inhibitor, or a PIK3 AKT pathway inhibitor with fulvestrant? All right, so it looks like we're going to mostly do PIK3CA targeted therapies. Okay, so now we can either put Dr. Abraham or Dr. Abu Hussein on the hot seat. So if you could choose between the two of them. All right, Dr. Abu Hussein, it's your turn to face the fire. So you have this patient now with co-mutation, and as Dr. Abraham showed us, it's not that common, 10 to 15%, but I feel like we talk about it a lot because this is really an area where we're not sure which one to target first. So what do you do in your practice?
So, you know, this is always a big question mark whenever it comes up in clinic or we see patients for a second opinion or so forth. There is no one right answer that could address that question. But I think all the data that we have comes from subgroup analyses from multiple clinical trials. As Dr. Abraham nicely showed us in the table, you can see that the oral SERD monotherapy did have an average of about 5 months median progression-free survival. We had results from Emerald, we had results from Ember-3, we have results from Avera, and also we had ctDNA analysis from Capitello-291, and all of them seem to agree on this 5 months median PFS. One particular trial that I think is quite appealing is the Avera trial that combined the oral SERD giredestrant along with Afinitor, because in a way it is addressing this pathway from both ends. It is addressing the ESR1 mutation, it is addressing the mTOR mutation downstream from the PIK3CA with a median PFS of a little over 10 months. So I find that to be extremely exciting. But having said that, I think even ANSWER-C, which is PIK3CA pathway inhibitor plus fulvestrant, is not unreasonable. But in my practice right now, I think I would go more with, of course, it's not approved.
Correct.
But if it were to be approved, I would favor using oral SERD and mTOR inhibitor.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.